Welcome to the Round 20 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. Has you got any tragic stories to tell us this week about your Supercoach team?
Not quite that tragic. I mean, in the cash league that we're both in, Mark, I think this is the first time I've missed finals in quite a while. So I finished on 9th, but can't be too upset about it, even though I would very much love to still have a crack over the next 4 rounds. But you've made it, Mark, so you'd be pretty happy.
I did make it, but listeners would know about my mate Nate, who I've referenced several times over the years on the show. He beat me in the last week by about 5 points, I think, and that put me out of the top four, which was pretty brutal, and used one of his last trades to bring in a donut to bring Ryan's score on the field to beat me. And he told me about it before he did it, just to sort of rub that in a little bit, and pretty painful.
That's all right. At least you're still in it, mate. Especially in that league. I think the last 2 years, the winners come outside of the top four. So, if anything, the odds are with you. So good luck. Let's get straight into how we scored on the weekend. I scored 22-31, which it wasn't fantastic. It wasn't awful either. It was painful having Luke Ryan on the bench with Heath Shaw and Zach Tui on field and no way to loophole him. Apart from that, still some underperformers on field. So Rockliffe continues to score horribly, and we continue to cop a lot of flack for an inability to let go, Mark, and I'm starting to question whether or not there's some legitimacy to that. And
Nank,
that just shows how behind the eight ball I am. All right, full on questioning it, Mark. That's where I should be at. And then we've got Nank Irvis, who continues to struggle, who we've for a few weeks now. He scored 66 as well, so not brilliant but not awful. I brought Martin in finally, so nice. Got his 142. Yeah, it was fine. Ryder scored 130. That was nice.
Ryder's my boy now.
Nothing much else to shout out. Did you beat me, Mark?
I did not beat you, mate. I scored 21.97, which looking around the leagues, I thought was pretty good. But I went up the rankings 44 spots to 1,083. I just cannot seem to push into that top 1,000. Just bouncing each week, just closer and closer and closer lately. So hopefully the trajectory is up and I can continue that. But Selwood 65, Merritt 67, and Rockliffe 66 in the midfield was very painful to take. And especially when like Witherden is just destroying Rockliffe lately, and definitely a bit slow to move on that one. And I just can't believe that Rocky just is never going to get better. But I guess we're going to have to start thinking that. Paddy Ryder destroyed at 130. That was pretty awesome. And it's great to see Fifey back in form. And my new recruit, Dusty, scored over 140 in both of his games into my team. So, yeah, that was pretty good. Looking to hopefully burst into the top 1,000. I've still got 5 trades left, so might look to use a couple of them this week.
In terms of a group update, the top scorer for the week and the winner of the Supercoach Coach Stubby Holder for the week is Warren, with Titch from Brownlow scoring 23.74. So big score for Warren. And also a shout out to Kyle, Tyrannosaurus Tex. He scored 23.43, which is pretty massive as well. But Kyle was already sitting third, so he's into second now. The runner-up of Supercoach at the moment is Kyle. And a really good shot to still win the prize. So we'll keep our fingers crossed for Kyle. Don't forget, Warren, to reach out to us via our social media pipes. We'll get that stubby holder out to yourself. In terms of a league update, we've had one league drop out of the top 20, but we still have 15 of the top 20 overall, which is fantastic. Zermichael's, which is our sort of closest competitor at this stage, has moved up into third from fifth last week, but we still hold number one and number two, including the Supercoach Coach Patreons, who are holding steady at second, which is massive accomplishment.
Value for money for those guys.
Love it. So let's move on into this week's show now, Mark. As discussed, we're going to focus on the run into Supercoach finals. It's the first week of finals this week. And for those of you lucky enough to be playing off, you get to make the most out of your last few trades. Nonetheless, we'll start off with this first question here from Scott McNaughton. And this is a bit of a controversial one, but we did get a few questions about it, and there's not a huge amount of talk about this week, so let's fit it in. Recommended strategies if Danger gets a week, which he has accepted. I mean, it seems bloody crazy to trade out the highest scoring player in Patrick Dangerfield for just a 1 week injury. But I mean, if you have 6 trades left, is it legitimate to sort of trade him out and trade him back in? Or would you prefer to punt that some bloke gets injured and you can use it a different way?
That's a tricky one. Look, I think that it's pretty rare that you would trade Dangerfield out. There are certain circumstances where I would strongly consider it. One would be if you have a lot of trades left and you're in the bottom half of the final, so you have a knockout final this week. It could be the difference between staying in that league and getting knocked out. So it'd be interesting to trade him out and then trade him back in. I guess you'd just be parking the money there and making sure that you had a way to bring him back in. I kind of feel that Danger is the sort of player that he's going to come back firing and want to completely destroy the rest of the season after that. So I think it'd be a pretty rare spot to trade him out. Even me with five trades, like, I don't really see a scenario that I'd be bringing him in. You'd have to almost get it exactly right. So say you brought in a Zorko type this week, or someone that you just thought was going to go nuts, had a good opposition or something, or and a low break even. That's sort of the only time I'd be doing it. Are you totally no circumstance you trade him out, or?
I think maybe if I had seven trades, which is the amount I had last week. I mean, after this week, you're only going to have 3 weeks left. So, yeah, that's when you'd get maybe a bit crazier, but I just don't see it. Yeah, he's worth a lot of money. Yeah, you could bring someone in. But, yeah, Luke Ryan scored 136. Witherden still smashing it. Like, it feels loose. The thing about trading Danger out is you're committed to trading him back in. Even prefer trading out a mid-pricer like Greenwood for 400K mid-pricer and hope that mid-pricer has a big spike 1 week and then just use the second trade a little bit more creatively next week. Yeah, I don't really see it, Mark, to be honest.
Did you keep Toby Green last week?
I did.
Yeah, and so did I. So, and that was a 2 week suspension. So, and we both had a fair few trades, like relatively, I think. So in the sort of 5 to 7 range. So the fact that we kept Green last week means that we'll definitely be keeping Danger this week based on that strategy.
I'm actually going to retract part of my statement and, you know, refocus on the fact that we talked about the show being focused on Supercoach Finals. So I should reconsider. If you are, let's say, in 5th to 8th, you don't have a double shot, you're coming up against potentially the bloke who just missed out on the top four like Mark did this weekend, and you consider yourself a fair outsider because you just snuck into the top eight. The bloke looks like he has a lot stronger team than you. Maybe you fire all your shots this week and you trade Danger out. But you'd have to be a very specific league scenario, I think, Mark.
Yeah, and you'd have to be not very confident in your bench player. So for me, I guess I was probably going to move Rocky to the bench this week and with it and on, but I guess Rocky gets a reprieve.
All right, next question here from Robert Bobby Gain. Would you upgrade Nank or an underperforming mid like Hanabry or Rockliffe? I'm facing this week, Mark.
Me too, mate.
What do we do? I mean, what's the worst of the three evils, really?
So, look, because they're the players that I've got, and I think they're the players that you've got as well, Mark, because it might be easier to compare Rockliffe to Nank. Okay. And Hanabry could easily be swapped out for Rockliffe in that situation. Personally, I don't know why. I just think that Rockliffe, because he scored well in Dream Team on the weekend, that he's more likely to put in four decent games on the run home. Maybe that's just wishful thinking, and I've been wrong on what Rockliffe for the last 2 months. So, yeah, you've got to take that into consideration as well. Like, on the last quarter on the weekend, he just did not get near the ball. Sitting at full forward, kicked a late goal, but that was the only thing that he did. It's definitely not right in Rockliffe world.
He's gone from an average where he was the second best in the league, and now he's priced at 380K. That's woeful. Yeah.
And on his way down as well. Last three scores, 57, 57, 66. Has not scored above 92 since coming back.
And I just wish I realised that, like, a bit sooner. So, yeah, woeful. Absolutely woeful.
Unfortunately, kind of season defining. And I think it's Rocky seems to be really the difference between me sitting in the top 1,000 or even 500 and me just languishing just outside that top 1,000. Now, back to the question.
Yeah.
With five trades, I'm likely to be making this move this week. Now, I don't really have a way to bring in much cash. So, like, I could trade out Parsons to, like, a non-playing rookie. But I've got Cousins and Hibbard sitting on my mid-bench. So, I think realistically, I'd probably like to trade one of those guys out. And so I'm just not going to get much cash. So I think that is a factor in what I'm going to end up doing and the targets that I can get. So one player that I wouldn't mind bringing in would be Steph Martin if Archie Smith is not selected again. From that perspective, that means that Nankervis would be the one to go. So it's as much of a who's coming in as a who's going out. Nankervis, with Soldo in the side, he's just going to struggle. Like, when he was scoring really, really well, he was playing solo ruck. He's not going to get that for the rest of the year based on Griffith's injury in the reserves. So It looks like he might be the guy to go out. With Riewoldt out on the weekend, he was playing full forward, kicked 3 goals and still only scored 66. So if he hadn't kicked those 3 goals, he would have really, really struggled. And from that perspective, I think that Nank is the one to go. And Martin in for me is kind of where I'm looking at the moment. How are you feeling about it?
Yeah, I think Nank's more likely to go for the both of us, though, because we have Ryder as well. Even though the chance that one of your main rucks will miss over the last few weeks is much smaller than, you know, if we were talking mid-season trading out your ruck cover. But, you know, still, I think it's a factor.
And, yeah, no, I agree with that.
Yeah, and when you look at Rockcliffe, he's got Gold Coast and North Melbourne in his next 4 games, whereas, like you said, with Nank, there's no real reprieve because his opposition doesn't really matter to an extent. It's more he's just not getting the same amount of time in centre clearances and all that.
Realistically, if I could get enough cash, I'd probably be tempted to try and find a way to trade them both. And that's kind of what's trapped me for, I feel like, the last month, is that the temptation's been there to trade them. But the way of actually bringing that money into my team has been really tricky with Cousins and Hibbard stalled on the mid-bench. I think that's why I've ended up keeping them both so long. But I think I've got to move on one of them. If I had 2 or 3 trades left, I don't think I'd be moving on either of them.
Yeah, that I agree with. And basically, if you're in a cash league or if league finals matters a lot, then you need to contextualize everything that we say for the last 4 weeks too, Mark, because your first and foremost focus should be who you're playing this week and how you're stacked up against them and how much risk you need to take on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, and so just to bring that up, I think if I'm sitting top 4 and I've got the double chance with 3 or 4 trades left, my general strategy is that try and save trades week 1. Like, winning that first final makes a huge difference because it's a lot easier just to win one more prelim to get into the grand final. But if you can somehow sneak through that first week, get the win on the board, get into a prelim with 3 or 4 trades left, that puts you in a hugely advantageous position. So I think generally, if I feel like I'm comfortable that I can win, I'm probably likely to hold trades and try and just get lucky into the prelims. So it doesn't always work, and you might have to use those trades the following week, but that's sort of been the strategy that I've used in the past, which works fairly well.
That's a good segue, actually, Mark, and I definitely agree with what you just said there. It's a good segue into Troy's question from Facebook. How do you win a league from 8th spots with your only 3 trades left? He's also mentioned that each trade he does ends up being a dud, but we won't assume that for your last 3, Troy. Mark, that's slightly different, I guess, because we were talking about if you were being in 4th, and I completely agree with that. And you take a little bit more of a punt on getting a free win in your first week. When you're an 8th, though, you know, money's on the line, but do you hold on for that last week? Do you go hard early to make sure you're there in the last week and then hope it pays off? Do you look at your opposition each week and try and predict when you might need the trades? It's quite tough.
Look, I don't think I've won too many leagues from outside the top 4. I think it is really difficult to do, but I have definitely seen it happen. And as you said, Marcus, in probably the biggest cash league we play in, the winner has come from outside the 8 a couple of times, and including 8th a couple of years ago. And what happens there is you just need your team to be a bit different, really. You need to just go hard early, I think. I think you've got to play every game like it's your last game, because it potentially is, and just got to try and do everything you can to win it and then just hope to get really, really lucky. And if I know that just looking at my league results, like, I'm in the Aces League. I don't think I made the final, but in the Kings League, I'm top 4. In the Queens League, I'm 2nd. Like, a lot of it is a fair bit of luck involved. These are all sort of like top 10 ranked leagues overall. And so you're not necessarily a much worse team, even though you finished 8th than you did finishing 1st, depending on how competitive the league is. But yeah, you've just got to get awfully, awfully lucky to win finals from 8th, I think.
Yeah, so all that context is important. Are you 8th? But are you 8th because you're unlucky? Or are you 8th because you're lucky? You know, it completely changes the context. So, yeah, overall, I think I would agree with you in the sense that you probably should go harder rather than being conservative from 8th. But then again, if you were unlucky to be 8th and, you know, by total points, you're actually in the top 3, top 4, then maybe you could argue you might want to take a little bit of a risk in one of the first 3 weeks and maybe look toward your potential opposition and that sort of thing. But yeah, it's tough to give advice on. So in general, if you have 8th, you're probably going harder.
Yeah, but what you said is good advice. There are caveats. It's just like you got to think about how you're going to deal with the result no matter which way it goes. And so you don't really want to have regrets, I think. Mm. And the best way to not have regrets is probably just to go hard from that early eighth position and just hope to hold on.
For example, when playing in a cash league against Mark, the only time I double trade in week one is when I play Mark week one. You gotta do what's important. Win the games that are important, right, Mark?
One of the things, I don't want to get sidetracked here, but one of the things from that league is that everyone seems to see me as a major target that they really want to beat. So everybody seems to double trade against me every week and try and loophole to the shit house and destroy me. So that has led to 5 of the last 8 games I've lost by less than 10 points. It's been pretty brutal.
Especially in the run home when people are like, well, might as well use these trades or I'm not going to make it into the 8. Yeah.
my ex-mate Nate, as I now refer to him, he said, look, I don't have many trades left, but this is the one bit of glory I'm going to get all season, so I'm going to try and take it. And he did.
Man, I did not take advantage of that this year. Next year, I better be on my ball. I'll just mark in the diary, you know, Mark. All right, let's move on to the next question. This one's from Brendan Colley. He feels crazy for even thinking about this, but Witherden onto field and Rocky to sub. Jeez, if we've done this for the last 3 weeks, probably be in the top foul, Mark, you would be. Is that legitimate? I mean,
Witherden, so many points ahead.
And Witherden,
we should have made this decision
really
4 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Witherden, I read a stat the other day that he's the 19th player to have more than 20 possessions in his first 6 games, like in history.
That's awesome.
So that's pretty massive. Mm. Yeah. Huge numbers for you. I keep expecting him to have a down game at some point. I did see him live against the Bombers. What was that? Probably 4 weeks ago, and he was really, really impressive.
And he's still pretty slight. You know, he's not like a physically impressive fella as a relatively young player to the AFL, but just finds a way. So very impressed.
Yeah, and look, if it wasn't for the danger situation, I think I would just have to do that. Like, you've got to play on form, and wish that I had made this decision 3 or 4 weeks ago. It just seems. It's so counterintuitive and it's so tricky to do. And because they're on the same team, you can't loop them. But yeah, look, Witherden has earned his stripes. And if it was me this week and I had that choice, I would be playing Witherden.
Yep. Another reason for that is Brisbane are playing Bulldogs this week. And the team that by far restricts opposition midfield scoring is the Western Bulldogs. And they actually let a little bit more points through in the back half and in the forward line. So if there's a week to jump off a midfielder like Rocky and jump onto a bloke that gets a little bit more of his possession, sometimes rebounding from that 50, it's probably this week against the Dogs too.
As a Zach Merritt owner, I am well aware of Bulldogs' ability to restrict a bloody midfielder.
Yeah, they might not win all the time, but they are good at winning and grinding out that midfield battle, the Bullies. All right, next question here from Shannon Swan. With Witherden and Ryan smashing it, is it worth trading in a donut to loophole? They both outscored a lot of my premiums and I couldn't loophole them on. And I definitely felt that pain this week, Mark. And I wonder whether or not this is sort of chasing last week's points or whether or not there's legitimate sort of reason to do this.
It depends how many trades you've got left, I think, and whether you have any other concerns in your team. With 5 trades left, if that loophole can make a big difference and you can really use it on a regular basis and you bring the right player, I think it's absolutely worth a go because you can pick up 40, 50 points a week over 4 or 5 weeks. So that's quite a lot and that would justify bringing in a trade in that way. I guess we're just assuming that the carnage doesn't come if you're making that move because I guess you're trading out like maybe a Scharenberg who's playing and scored 86 on the weekend. So it would reduce the amount of cover you have going forward. So always a gamble and you could lose out in the longer term. If it was the right setup for my team, I'd strongly consider doing that though.
And I feel like we said this last year, but this year is definitely an extension from that as well. Like the comp is so close that there are very few teams that are resting right now. So down to 11th, you've got Saints at 36. And then when you go to 12th, you've got Hawthorn at 34 and they don't try and lose games. You've got Collingwood then at 30 and Nathan Buckley's got his job on the line. Gold Coast is the same. Even the teams that are not doing too well still have a lot to play for. So in that sense, I think I'm also not really expecting too much carnage to happen this year, Mark. I know that's optimistic, but I think I'd agree with your assessment there.
Yeah, and I think that the fact that you're drawing parallels to last season, that it's so close, plus we've got the post-round 23 bye for the teams that do make the finals, those two things should add up to not a lot of people getting put out to pasture.
Mm. You're not going to get 13 blokes not showing up in round 23 like we did with Freo a few years ago, that's for sure.
Freo are the one team that maybe could afford to just rest some players this year, and I wouldn't be surprised if Frost does put a couple out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know if I'd say their club can afford to, but I know definitely Lions' propensity to do that hasn't diminished. If there's one coach that has not sort of slowed down on that, it's definitely Ross. All right, we'll move on to the next question here. This one's from Emily Chalice. Decided not to trade Green last week and put Greenwood on the ground. However, he was pretty poor, scoring only the 51. Would you consider upgrading him instead of side-swapping one of the mid-prices that we talked about? Because Greenwood is at a pretty good price. I mean, when you look at Rockliffe at 381, then you consider Greenwood's surpassed him in price at 386. If you're concerned about Greenwood's last four rounds, it could be a pretty good time to trade him out for the finals run home.
Yeah, and I guess that this is a question that I need to answer for myself as well, like Greenwood versus Nankervis, who actually goes out, because I could just put Nankervis to the bench. I do seem to have more faith in Greenwood at the moment. They seem to have a shocker against the Pies on the weekend, but I don't think that's going to be a regular thing, and I've been so impressed by Greenwood and what I've seen, so I do expect him to bounce back, probably more than Nank. He's $20,000 cheaper as well. Do I think if you've held on to Green and you have some cash to upgrade Greenwood, look, I think that's it'd be hard to argue against that. And Kennedy, it can be very, very up and down. The West Coast have a decent draw coming home, and he can go really big. You'd be really relying on him having quite a big game on the run home. It's quite a gamble, but yeah, look, I'd be struggle to argue against those moves.
I think something to note is that Adelaide do have a tough run for the last four rounds. They've got Port, who are playing off for the top four. They've got Essendon, who are playing off for the top eight. They've got Sydney the week after, who are the form team in the competition right now. And then they've got West Coast last, who are also playing for the top eight. So
yeah,
even though that doesn't mean poor scoring for Greenwood, it is something to sort of take into consideration as well.
It is.
All right, on to the last question. This one's from Adam Abella, or at Grievous 131 on Twitter. Cash is no factor. Who has the best end of season? He's referenced taking Zorko as somebody who's fresh and with a good draw. And Zorko certainly had a fairly strong second half to the season, so I don't disagree with that entirely, although they do play the Bulldogs, who we've mentioned is a bit risky for midfield scoring this week. But nonetheless, who else would you be looking at, Mark, do you reckon, for good potential finishes for the run home? Have you looked at all that, considering you're in cash leagues, Mark, the last 4 weeks, and who might have sort of better opposition relative to other teams? Or you've still remained ambivalent on that because of how tight the comp is?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. Except for Brisbane, I have remained a bit outside of looking at strength of schedule, which is something that I've always looked at in the past. But like every team that I seem to go to, it's like, oh yeah, they've got a tough draw. Oh yeah, they've got a tough draw. Oh yeah, they've got a tough draw. I guess some slightly more tougher than others, but everyone does seem to have a pretty tricky draw because it's quite competitive. I guess that someone that does have a really tough draw, but someone that's been on a rampage for quite a while, is Matt Crouch, averaging 121 over the last 5 weeks. And with Sloan being tagged out of games and clearly being the number one target, he is let to run free a bit and just keeps getting it done week after week. So I think he's a good Zorko alternative. Beyond that, it's hard to find who the Paddy Cripps is, because Paddy Cripps is the one that just went nuts in the last few weeks last year. I guess that Tom Mitchell is still a consideration. I think that if you don't have Fife's form of late has been awesome, and I'd strongly consider bringing him in.
I think I've got a couple other here to mention. Again, it's a little bit mixed, so it's not the cleanest of runs, but good enough, I reckon. You got Richmond. You got Hawthorn this week. If you win and you're in the top four, you miss Geelong next week. And then you got Freo the week after, and you finish with St Kilda. So considering they're actually sitting in the top four at the moment, that's pretty decent opposition. Again, have asterisks on it because of how tight the comp is. But if you're stretching to look for good draws, that's actually not too bad there. You've got North Melbourne is the other one, I reckon. You've got Collingwood, Hawthorn, St Kilda, and Brisbane. So Saints are the only one who is still vying for that top eight, realistically. And they're a little bit on the fringe, and their form recently has been a little bit up and down. And then the last one, which, Mark, you know, I've been talking about you for a little while now, Essendon. You've got Carlton this week. Adelaide, you'll skip if you win and you're in the top four. And then you finish with Gold Coast and Freo. That's pretty good.
It is pretty good. I guess it's hard to find too many premiums from those sides, especially the midfield premiums, because you're looking at like Cochin. You wouldn't pick a North Melbourne premier mid, Heppel and Zeret. So, yeah, tricky to pick from those guys, I think.
Yeah, but if you were looking to draw as an indicator and you wanted to take a little bit more of a POD, they would probably be my little pick. Outside of teams, Mark, is there anyone that's particularly catching your attention in terms of a player for the finals?
Not particularly, mate. The one with player I wish I had was Tom Mitchell. The one player that's probably burning us the most on the leagues on the weekend was Clayton Oliver, just going completely nuts. He just keeps exceeding expectations. But he's got such a high percentage ownership, I think it's hard to justify bringing him in with that. I guess that I know that the Giants have got a bit of a tricky draw, but Coniglio has gotten cheap, and if he can stay fit, he'd be all right. And I think that Lachie Neale could post sort of a 115, 120 on the run home.
I know we talked about him last week, but I still don't mind Josh Kennedy at 430K. Only scored a 97 on the weekend, but I like looking to the forwards a little bit for the run home, because especially if you're behind. I feel like they're the real guys that can give you one big punch in the gut to your opponent to help you get over the line there.
I guess if you're looking for a really real smoky, I think the one that's probably going under the radar and don't want to let the cat out of the bag too early, but he good chance of making my team next year is Jack Martin, who's defender forward, averaging 100 over the last five rounds, 95 over the last three, and just seems to have really found his niche and be sort of building into that player that we're expecting him to become.
I like that, Mark. Zach Williams, I don't mind it as well. Especially before he got injured, he was pretty sure in the top six defenders. He had that 49 in round 14, missed a couple of games as well. So his price has come off a little bit, but at 463,000, he seems to have overtaken Shaw as the preeminent sort of scoring defender down there, and he seems like a decent bet as well.
Yep, I agree with that.
All right, I think that's enough in terms of different picks. We have to save a few for the last few weeks, Mark, because we seem to be doing sort of these calls most weeks, so let's not exhaust the whole list. In terms of rookies, do you see any situation where you might bring in a downgrade this week?
More than likely, I'm going to have to bring in a downgrade this week, mate. And I'm looking at Connor Glass from the Hawks. He had a great debut, a bit quieter in his second game. I guess that's to be expected. But he does seem to be the most traded player in this week. And just at 117, he's a defensive mid ability to switch. I think that there's a really good chance to come into my team this week.
So you're obviously not looking for a donut, Mark. You're still looking for some sort of cover?
I've got enough donuts, mate. I've got Cousins and Hibbert on my mid-bench, so I just don't think that I can be afford to bring in another donut. And that's one of the reasons why I've actually been a bit more conservative on my trades, is that I just didn't have that extra depth on my mid-bench to cover any late-season carnage. So, yeah, if I can fill one of those spots, that'd be nice.
Keith and McKay are also on the bubble this week. I think I'd agree with you that I'd take the back mid flexibility ahead of them. But if that was not relevant at all, would you see either of those two being a little bit more attractive? I mean, I've actually been pretty impressed from their first two performances.
Yeah, I like Alex Keith, but just with his draw and the fact that Lever's going to come back at some stage, and I think that it is Keith out, Lever in, so that would probably affect his job security a bit.
All right, Mark, I think that should wrap it up for this week's show. Do you have anything else to leave our listeners with before the final series kicks off?
It's a very tough weekend. I seem to be having very difficult Sundays lately. Seeing the Bombers sort of get near the Doggies and show some real promising signs in that game, but just not quite have the composure to get it done. It's pretty disappointing, so I'll be looking to get a win over Carlton this week. If we lose again to Carlton this year, that would be pretty shattering. We've had some pretty good games in the last few years, so yeah, pretty keen to get another win on the board, and I think I've got about 200 points on you, so just I'm happy just to hold that lead if I can.
Yeah, it just should be about 30, but that's all right. That's all right.
Did we, just on that point, did we get any nominations for the Josh Williams Award this week?
No, we didn't, Mark. I think everyone thought, wow, this Mark bloke, so harsh on this lovely Marcus bloke. In terms of vice-captain this week, we don't get Danger, which would have been an absolute no-brainer playing a Friday night.
Dusty would have been a bloody no-brainer as well if he didn't play the second last game of the round.
Yeah, so do you know who you're going for then, Mark?
Not off the top of my head, mate. Not yet. Look, I think I'd be considering Joel Selwood against the Swans. Probably, I'd love to say Rockliffe, but probably not going to consider him. Yeah, probably. I know that Selwood is coming off 65, and the Swans might run someone with him, but without Danger, I just he's going to have to stand up. So Selwood into Dusty, probably for me.
I've got North players as a loophole this week, so I can pick from the first four games. So I'll go with Doherty against Essendon. Still, I think the second highest averager behind Dangerfield for the year. And then Dusty for the Capitano. And Dusty's been in pretty brilliant form, so you'll need a big one for Doherty to take it, I would assume. You're almost evaluating Martin like you are Danger at this point in the season.
Yeah, and that's especially against the Hawks, because I think that he should do all right against them. Doherty does seem like maybe even a smarter pick than Joel Selwood at this point, given Selwood's coming off a 65. Selwood would be a lot more gambly. So, yeah, you're probably making a better decision than me.
Yeah, but you can't do that, mate. Come on. When you're playing off for the eight, you can't give the vice captaincy for an opposition player.
Especially since I'm going to be at the game, that would be really tough. So that would be tough. But then again, I just need to minimize my differences to you.
Yeah, priorities, mate.
Yeah.
Screw Essendon, right?
Cash or beating Marcus or having my team win. Yeah, my Bombers winning always comes first.
Yeah, All right. I'm glad you ended there, Mark. And with that, we'll catch you all next week. Mark's going to have a little sabbatical, so we'll get Jack and Faz on next week. So we'll miss you, Mark, but we'll catch you again in a fortnight, mate.
Shattered not to be on the show with Jack, mate. I always learn something when he's on the show.
Mm. So this is precisely why I've got him on when you're away, Mark. All right. See you all.
Yeah. Don't make it crazy. Don't make it crazy.